Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so proud to bring you your team every day. The Warriors had another one, their second-to-last preseason game, and they beat the Lakers. And I got to do something that I really enjoy and that will be a frequent part of Locked On Warriors, which is having a guest on who is more familiar with the other team. And it brings diversity of perspective. And Darius Soriano is a great example of this because while he runs the Forum Blue and Gold, which is a great Lakers blog, he also is very familiar with the Warriors, both as division rivals and just watching a lot of the film. We talk about the Warriors actually kind of a lot. And I love talking with him about this team and their takeaways from everything. We do get into a little Lakers talk, but the Lakers are an interesting team too. And today's episode is sponsored by Athletes Collective. You can go to athletescollective.com, use the promo code Warriors, and you can get 15% off your first order. It's great high-performance athletic wear. The conversation with Darius runs about 45 minutes. I think you'll really enjoy it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Danny.
So we'll focus a little bit more on tonight's game, though we can get into what happened last time around. But from your perspective, what were the big takeaways from these games?
Well, tonight especially, I thought that Brandon Ingram played his best game of the preseason, especially in the second half and in the fourth quarter. He did a lot of ball handling. He looked aggressive with his own offense in terms of looking for his own shot, but he did what he's been doing all preseason as well, which is moving the ball, playing good defense, padding the box score.
Yeah, and that's an important part of the development process, and looking comfortable in those kind of circumstances at his age is a very good thing, and he can look across the court and see some guys that have benefited a lot from that over the course of their career.
Yeah. You know, he's still so young, and I think people look at his frame and they see that physical immaturity, but I think what we're seeing from his approach to the game and how he carries himself on the floor is that he definitely has a more advanced approach to the game mentally. So I think that that's serving him well so far preseason.
Yeah, and there's, I can already see the kind of the inklings of an overall idea that I've thought about with the Lakers, which is that they will need to strike the dynamic in terms of who has the ball in their hands when. And what Ingram has shown to me is the kind of skill set that can be useful for a secondary guy, and that's great. You know, that's a very important thing to do. But so that does, if you think of him as a starter, which I believe we both do long term, then that does kind of change the way you think about somebody like Jordan Clarkson, because you really don't need more than, let's say, D'Angelo and Ingram together unless everybody's really okay to share the ball as much as they have to make that work.
Yeah, I think you're looking at Clarkson that way. I also think in some ways you're looking at Julius Randle that way too. You know, both those guys are sort of ball-dominant players. They like to make plays for themselves and for other guys, which is always great. But when that comes within the context of individual shot creation, then you have to start sort of refining that to work more within the team concept, you know, as more of a ball mover, which I think Ingram is certainly showing that. And I think Russell is like that as well, D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, and it all fits together more in that way, and that's also why you see certain players like Lou Williams, like Mo Spates, who was on the Warriors last year. Those guys work better on second units because they can play their game without the kind of consequences. Jamal Crawford is probably the best example of this. He's a lot better as a second unit guy because he isn't great enough at what he does to make it work on the first unit, so then you let those guys be on the second unit and take the character.
Yeah, that old sort of a Vinnie Johnson microwave guy, right?
Yeah.
And I think throughout the history of the league, a lot of really good teams have had guys like that. They may not be every night dependable guys, but the night where they start to cook, you can turn to them and sort of tailor your offense to feature them a little bit more, especially when you have natural passers at other positions. I think that's also one of the reasons why the Warriors work so well, you know, and people have talked about potentially having Klay Thompson not start, or if not necessarily not start, then be a guy who plays on, well, on the second unit a lot, because he's one of those guys who just can get hot in a hurry and can carry your offense for long stretches. And when you surround him with other guys who are natural ball movers, you can see how well he thrives.
Yeah, Klay's a weird case because he can do well in both circumstances. I think he's good at taking advantage of the shots that others create for him, and I always thought that that was his best role, but he deserves a ton of credit for what he did in the series against Portland when Curry was either out or limited, and he took on a larger role and did a good job of it. But what I was thinking about in terms of the Lakers and the Warriors' difference is that the Lakers might end up with this eventually, it's going to take a year or two maybe, this solution of Ingram and Russell in the starting lineup and Randall taking kind of control of the second unit. And the Warriors are potentially, it looks like, going to approach that from a different angle on the same concept, which is the idea of staggering Durant and Curry so that they can each get time being the guy out there.
Yeah, and I think that that's the best approach for them long term. Obviously, I think overlapping their minutes a fair amount is great too, right? It's sort of a wonderful problem to have when you're Steve Kerr and you've got these four all NBA level guys who can all impact offensively in these unique and really impactful ways. But yeah, long term, I think from the Warriors' perspective, staggering them a little bit more, and I've been noticing the way that Kerr has really been mixing and matching lineups with Curry, Durant, and Klay, and Draymond, and sort of, okay, now it's Curry and Durant, and now it's Curry and Klay, and now it's Durant and Klay, or Durant and Draymond, and then surrounding them with guys like Livingston and Iguodala, and even McCaw, right? So these guys all get a little bit of chance to be a featured player, and ultimately that's why they're going to win so many games and do so by double digits.
And there is a concept with it of team building that you love to have guys who can make all of those alignments work. And so part of it is that you want the best players available in the hope that you can make it work. But at the same point, understanding that having guys that with complementary skill sets can be very important. And so when the Lakers are naturally much earlier in the process than the Warriors are, but that's something that Golden State has eventually figured out, whether it's by luck, by planning, a lot of it is both, with players like Ian Clark. Like, I think the hope for Clark is that if they run a little bit more of a Klay included stagger, that he can fill kind of that really poor man's Klay Thompson role with the starters, with Curry, and then Klay can take a larger role with the reserves.
Yeah, I think that one thing that the Warriors have done a great job at is sort of identifying players who have enough skill to play in multiple lineups, but are good at one or two specific things that really help that specific group. And so you see that with a guy like Clark. I can see them trying to develop Looney that way, and then seeing what they can do with McCaw that way as well, where they allow these guys to play their natural games because they're surrounded by so much talent. And so you don't need to lean on them in any way, shape, or form. You just sort of let them be free within the context of what they're good at, and then that's why their skill set shines through.
Yeah, and also putting them in a little bit of a variety of circumstances. Something I've noticed with McCaw, and this was also true tonight, is that at moments, he's substantially more comfortable with the ball in his hands a little bit more. It's not a big surprise. A lot of guys coming out of college, especially if they're out of a smaller school, are that way because they were the guy at their other place, and becoming more of a cog can be a challenge. And what is a benefit to if you can keep working through it and succeed as you're making adjustments and as you're trying things out, is that you really get the experimentation time, and the Warriors will have it in a little bit of a different place because they'll play a lot of garbage time. And so you can use that as experimentation time as well. We don't usually think of it that way. Usually garbage time is just occupying space, but you can get something really productive out of that.
Oh, I I've seen it this preseason already with the way the Warriors are playing is sort of this purposefulness to all of the minutes that they're giving to players. I was watching the last game on Saturday between the Lakers and Warriors, and Bob Myers was on the telecast talking for an extended period. And one of the things he mentioned was a conversation that he had with Steve Kerr, and Kerr saying, you know, well, I'm going to start Looney and in place of Draymond, who had gotten some rest that night. And Myers said, well, you know, that's great. Like, we need to see these guys. We need to get them evaluated. And what better lineups to sort of see what these guys can do than with some of these starting players as well, right? And so I've always said that, you know, that the more talented guys that you surround good players with, the more they're able to sort of play their own game, like I was saying before. And so I think with some of the young guys that the Warriors have, and they do have sort of this hybrid team, right? They've got all these fantastic veteran great players, but they lost depth this offseason in order to sign Durant. And so it's good for them to sort of see what McCaw can do and what Looney can do.
Absolutely. I wanted to start or go a little bit to the start of the game, and it was striking just how well the Warriors starters played. But as a difference between this game and the last one is that it appeared, at least to me, that the Lakers weren't doing a terrible job defensively. There were some adjustments and some things they were missing, but it was more just that they got out-executed by a superior team.
Yes, yes. I also think, too, that the first few possessions, I thought, set the tone for the Lakers in that they had a couple of easy baskets and they just missed them. Mm-hmm. And then they had a turnover. And I think what you're going to see from the Warriors this year is just how much they punish teams who turn the ball over. And it was like that last season as well. And so the Lakers got behind early, and it's going to be hard to dig yourself out of that hole completely. But I thought that they did a pretty good job stabilizing throughout the course of the game. The Warriors made a few, you know, really strong runs, which they're going to do against every team. But I thought the Lakers did a pretty good job of battling and for the most part, keeping their composure.
Overall, the Lakers backups outplayed the Warriors backups in this game. And that's a good sign. I mean, you could talk about that it's preseason and you don't read too much into it, but it also helps when you play Ingram, who had a really nice performance out there, when you're putting him in that role. But the Lakers certainly deserve credit for doing that, especially after the game got kind of out of hand early.
Yes. Well, one thing that has been a theme for the Lakers this preseason is that their 6 through 10 players are on average going to be better than other teams' 6 through 10 players. The Lakers don't have a lot of top-end players at this point, because the guys who they're going to be depending on are to be those guys eventually are young, and the veterans that they've signed are more role-playing types. But when your 6 through 10 guys are potentially either Lou Williams and Jordan Clarkson, and then a Jose Calderon who didn't play the last couple of games due to a calf injury, and then Larry Nance Jr. and Tarik Black, these guys are rotation level NBA players, and Clarkson and Williams especially, I think, are good guards. And when you put them on a second unit against backup guys, and they're essentially, you know, probably league average starter level players, they can make a difference. And I think they're doing that against most teams this preseason. This was their seventh game, and it's pretty much been consistent like that. And then you add a guy like Ingram who can show flashes and be sort of, even as a rookie, a glue guy, who does a little bit of everything, and that second unit's making some good strides.
And that's not a terrible place to be in when it seems like it's just a year to build. It's not even necessarily about rebuilding, it's just about building, because it's a foundation, new coach, so much has changed over in the course of this year, even though a lot of the personnel is the same, just with the system and everything. And I saw a lot of that tonight. Just one of the things that stood out at this point with the Lakers was that they had much better effort on defense, which is an important part of it, but their communication wasn't great and it didn't seem like they were all the way in. And if the effort is good, that's a sign that they're buying in with the coach and that they're trying, and the other stuff can come with time.
Yeah, I think that that's a big difference from last year, and I'm glad that you brought that up, is just the last couple of years, they've definitely seemed a bit down on themselves a bit more, and I think that that leads to not... Even if you don't want to call it a lack of buy-in, it leads to sort of those down shoulders and hung heads. Well, when you make mistakes, and I think this year one of the key differences is just sort of the attitude that they've been carrying themselves with in terms of trying to compete each and every possession. It doesn't always happen that way, but we're seeing more of it more consistently.
I want to take a quick moment to tell you about Athletes Collective, the inaugural sponsor of Locked On Warriors, and it is a sportswear company that offers premium athletic gear at an affordable price without the logos. And when you think affordable price without the logos, you think that maybe it'll be lower quality. It really isn't. I've been using Athletes Collective stuff for a while now and have been blown away with the quality. It's very comfortable, provides a lot of support. It's the same high quality technical fabrics as the big brands, but because of the lack of logos, Athletes Collective charges 40 to 50% less. It is a fantastic product. I use it for working out. I use it around the house. And sometimes when I'm going out socially, it's a great as an undershirt or something like that. And if you are somebody who isn't technical about washing everything, one of the great things about Athletes Collective stuff is that it is pre-shrunk, so you can wash and dry it as many times as you want, and it never loses that original shape or ability to keep you dry when you sweat. So it does what it needs to do even if you put it through the wringer, and that is a great thing, even if you are somebody like me who's more diligent about washing things, just because it's resilient, and it does a great job. I've had stuff for months, never had any sort of problem with that. And not only do you have that 40 to 50% less than the major brands, but through Locked On Warriors, you can actually get it for 15% off on your first order. So what you do is you go to athletescollective.com and use the promo code Warriors at checkout, and that gives you 15% off. So again, you go to athletescollective.com, use the promo code Warriors, and you get 15% off. Support the show, get some great clothing, and try out an awesome new product. Now back to the show. And there is an analogy to when Mark Jackson took over Golden State his first year. Part of his change was scheme, and he and Mike Malone did a nice job there. But a big part of it was also accountability and just making sure that they're going to do that. And one of the major flaws for the Lakers last year, and this goes to the idea of having your best player be somebody who, you know, can take possessions off defensively and a coach who's completely okay with that, it appeared last year, is that feeds all the way down. You know, that's one of those things that when a player isn't getting pulled because they're not carrying on that end, it's not really about setting a bad example. It's that you're not creating the right feedback. You're not creating the right incentive structure out there. And guys like Larry Nance is the guy that always stood out to me, though you could argue D'Angelo, that going after it just a little bit more can be a significant difference. It doesn't get you to good, but it gets you to a lot better than they were.
No, I think that the things you're talking about are essentially stuff I wrote about all of last season, which was this sort of big double standard. And I feel like it's hard to basically build the right type of team atmosphere if those types of double standards exist. Now, you can't treat every player the same, and I get that, but it can't be such this canyon in terms of accountability differences that exist. I just don't think that you can build the right team culture that way. And this year, what I'm seeing at least is much more togetherness. And I think your Warriors analogy is a good one, that Mark Jackson did a really good job of sort of along with the players, right? Because I think that the players sort of carry that forward as well with good character when you have those good character guys like Clay and Curry and Draymond, and then you bring in a guy like Iguodala, right? Like, these are culture setters. But when you can turn around the accountability, then you get things back on the right track. And then if you improve the coaching, like the jump from Jackson to Kerr, that's when a team can make a leap.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. And the hope is that you don't always have to do that with a different coach. Like, it can be the same guy. Brad Stevens is a relatively good example of how that happened. The Celtics have defended well, and they got better with talent. And Stevens, I think, has improved as a coach as well in terms of preparation and just kind of getting the team in the right place to succeed. So in terms of, so you've now watched two games of this Warriors team. You probably watched a little bit more just knowing you. What have you taken away from, like, the McCaw-Clark situation and just kind of the Warriors overall, things that might have surprised you or interested you?
I think McCaw is the guy who stands out to me the most, just in terms of his, of how well-rounded a player that he is. You know, sometimes college stats can be misleading. You look at his numbers like, oh, you know, he scored pretty well and pretty efficiently, and he was an above average 3-point shooter. You know, I think his college numbers were around like 37 or 38%, and he can handle the ball, but he's a good passer and all of these things. And you wonder how those things are going to translate to the NBA level, but he's been shooting the three ball well at the NBA level. And he's making sort of advanced reads when defenses collapse on him as a passer. And so these types of ball skills that he's exhibiting and his ability to sort of be a three-level scorer, as I like to call it, when you can hit the three and then you can get into the mid-range and finish there as well, and then get all the way to the basket and finish, you know, even if not in traffic, then get by a guy and create easy looks at the rim. I wasn't sure that stuff was going to translate so quickly for him, because McCaw was a guy that I was looking at as potentially being available when the Lakers drafted at number 32, and I thought he might be a target. And so I looked at his game and he intrigued me. And so to see it translate so well to the NBA level, granted it's only preseason, but he's still performing well. And so he's one of the guys that has surely stood out to me. I also think that Clark, with another year in the system, that he's showing that he can be a rotation level player, which the Warriors need in terms of more wings and guards. Like, you wouldn't necessarily think that because of all the star power they have there, but you know, Kerr, I think, is going to manage the rotation a little bit different this year, and he's probably going to want to give those guys a few more nights off than he did last year, rather than just cutting their minutes. And having viable backups who can actually step in and play 25 or 30 minutes with, you know, some of the other star players still there, that's going to be so useful during the season.
Something that I've thought about a few times is that I get a little bit confused as to McCaw's age, because he plays with a level of maturity that you don't usually see from a rookie. And so then you think, oh, you know, maybe he's a little bit older. He's 20. He'll turn 21 next week. But that is really unusual. You don't usually see a guy, especially in some ways, who went to a small school just because they don't have the bright lights on them and they're not usually playing in the same type of situation, to be able to be as competent as he is in areas that usually only come with experience.
No, I think that's exactly right. You normally see these rookies who come in who have that level of poise, and they might be a guy like Damian Lillard or a CJ McCollum, right? Like, those are other smaller school players, but they were juniors, right? They were 21 or 22 by the time they're getting to the league, and he's only 20. And that age difference matters. You know, I was watching a Lakers game when they played Portland, and the difference between Damian Lillard and D'Angelo Russell was pretty big. But then I look at their ages, and Lillard's a full 5 years older than Russell. And I think about, you know, where some of these guys who are showing us a certain level of maturity with their game at such a young age, you know, where will they be in 3, 4, 5 years when they're already thinking the game at a high level, but they're physically maybe not there yet, right? Because just because they're so young.
Yeah, it's an unusual progression, but it is one that we're seeing a little bit more, and it's great that some of those players are really getting a shot early in the league, because sometimes they sit around a little while, especially when a team didn't invest a ton in them, which is more true of McCaw than D'Angelo Russell, of course.
No, sure, sure.
But that is nice to see, because sometimes guys get buried for a million different reasons or get put in a bad situation. I mean, we could each rattle off 15 guys that just got put in the wrong spot at the wrong time.
Oh, yeah. The entire – I say this a lot, right? But the NBA, the talent level is so high, and almost all of these guys, 1 through 15 on every single roster, were star players at some point in their careers, probably up through college. And so they didn't get to the NBA and just become bad. You know what I mean? That maybe it's front office dynamics or bad ownership or roster turnover that doesn't build any continuity either with the players or with the coaches, and or they're not running the right system that is really going to highlight your skills. There's all sorts of things that contribute to a player's success. And ultimately, player success really does come down to opportunity plus actual role and being put in a position to actually succeed. And it doesn't happen for so many players.
It doesn't. I think about Ben McLemore a lot, and there are a lot of players like that. But also, we focus, for a good reason, we talk a lot about the players and the personnel and making sure that you spend everything there and that you're maximizing your money, and there is legitimacy to that. It is my job. But the coaching staff, the facilities, the training, all that kind of stuff is extremely important. And even beyond that, just putting players in the right circumstances to succeed, surrounding talent and everything like that, which is generally not salary capped, and that has so much other stuff. And I think the Spurs have been a great catalyst for people to understand how important and how central that can be in terms of turning players and maximizing them within what they can do.
Yeah, I think that leveraging your advantages in all areas are so important, and hiring the right people. And I think that that's one of the things that the Warriors did with the ownership change, is they started to reinvest in people who could actually make a difference more on the periphery. And you sort of expand the group of impactful people within your organization. And then that really does start to trickle down and into the player development, which is what really builds a roster and builds a team. So we can all talk about how every championship team or even every contending team is going to have this group of great players, right? Like you can talk about Steph and Durant, or you can go back to those last Laker championship teams with Kobe and Gasol, or those Heat teams, LeBron and Wade and Bosch, and those are the headlining guys. But so much of a team success is always going to come down to the role players and a random guy here or there who really does sort of play above what you would expect for a prolonged period of time. And so much of that is going to come down to the coaching that he receives and the positions that he's put into and the player development that is going on behind the scenes to sort of build these guys up to be everyday contributors. And I think that that's really the difference between excellent run franchises and ones who are sort of middling or poor performing.
We focus on, I talk a lot about how MVPs win championships, and championships are also sometimes a bad way to measure success because they're always anomalies. Like, that's just the way championships are. I mean, you can think about the Lakers teams or these current Warrior teams. Like, that is something different. But successful franchises require not only star talent, but require players outperforming their expectations.
Yes.
Because you can't hit on everything. You know, like, unless you're, let's say, like what Cleveland did, where they won the lottery 2 years when I think they were pretty deep in the odds. You know, like, unless that sort of thing happens, you really need to get second-round picks, undrafted free agents, that sort of thing, because that's how you build up your talent level. Because the NBA does a really good job of having a fair league structure and salary cap, and there are wiggle rooms. There are some little flaws in it, some of which they might correct in the new CBA. You know, like how kind of how Durant got to the Warriors is a story of some CBA mistakes. But they won a championship before that with more of drafting well, developing talent, and adding players like Leandro Barbosa, Mo Spates, Sean Livingston. Like those were guys that they got with smaller assets that were huge, not only developing the players that they drafted, and both of those things were gigantic.
Well, one thing I was going to say, because I think about this when it comes to the Lakers, especially recently, is that there's also a difference between sort of your college scouting and your pro personnel scouting. And I think the most successful teams are the ones who do both really, really well. Mm-hmm. And so the Warriors are a perfect example, right? They hit not only on players who were drafted in that lottery range, right? But they hit on a guy like Draymond Green, who is drafted in the second round. And then on top of that, they sign these guys who are maybe undervalued around the league for whatever reason. Maybe it's because it's a guy like Spates who has been in multiple situations and always just sort of been the same guy, and okay, he can do this and do that, but he can't do these other things, and he can't really play on bad teams, right? But you scoop up a guy like him, you scoop up a guy like Livingston, you make a really smart signing with a guy like Iguodala, and now suddenly you've built up your team where you really don't have too many weaknesses, and you have options, and if this guy is not going, then you can turn to another option, and he's going to fill in the gap, and smart teams sort of build both ways, and when you can do that, you're going to be able to sustain it for a really long time.
Plus, what sometimes frustrates fans of various teams, but is an important truth to understand, and the Lakers can attest to this from prior years, and the Warriors can do it now, is that once you reach a certain threshold of competence and quality, the last part of it can be done through more, like, you could call it good luck, but it's kind of earned. And so that is getting David West for the minimum, getting Zaza Pachulia for the room mid-level exception. Those types of things can happen, but that's the benefit of running through everything else correctly.
Oh, definitely. I think, and it's one of the things that good teams will always, especially in good markets, right? Good teams in good markets will always be able to do. It's come play for us and have a chance at winning. And that sort of the player mentality, especially those players who are in years sort of, you know, 7, 8, 9 through 15, right? So you've got these veterans who have seen the league. They have had whatever amount of individual success they're going to have, because a lot of times you build your name in those first two contracts, right? And then after that, that mindset starts to shift about, well, it's not necessarily always going to be about me. How can I sort of be part of something that's bigger than myself? And the good teams benefit from that more than bad teams. And the Lakers are seeing the opposite of that right now, where they're essentially having to overpay free agents to come and help build up that culture, right? And to help bring their young players along so that they can develop, and so that, you know, in 5, 6, 7 years, if this core is still relatively intact, that when those guys are good enough to sort of carry your team and maybe take them into the playoffs, into the second round or to the conference finals, that they'll then be able to attract those types of players who are willing to come and play for under market contracts.
Absolutely. One thing more Lakers focused, but it's just a question I'm interested in, is Brandon Ingram long term. So it's sometimes an arbitrary distinction, might not be in this case. Long term, is your feeling right now that he's going to be a 3 or a 4?
I think long term he will be a 3 with the ability to play the 4 for extended stretches, similar to Durant, similar to LeBron. You know, not necessarily at that level, right? We're talking, you know, top
role, not quality.
Yes, yes. Yes, exactly. We're not saying, oh, this guy's going to be the best player in the league one day, right? But I think that's ultimately the goal. I think that his perimeter skills and his ball handling and his decision making with the ball in his hands make it so that you're going to want him to be an offensive initiator a fair amount of time. And I just don't know of too many, unless, you know, when we're talking 5-10 years down the line, maybe the league shifts this way, or maybe Ben Simmons becomes, you know, this new prototype and Ingram is sort of that same type of guy. But I just don't know of too many teams who are going to put the ball in your power forward's hands and say you're going to be a perimeter guy mostly. And
we're going to see a lot more of that. I'm telling you right now, we're going to see a lot more of it. But the bigger distinction that is important to consider is that if Ingram gets good enough, the lines between the positions get fuzzy, not necessarily because of who he defends, but because of who defends him. So there was this point that I made last year, mostly on Dunked On, about when there was the nominal thing of Paul George being the power forward. Paul George was not the power forward. Paul George was being guarded by the other team's best perimeter defender, and he was generally guarding the other team's best perimeter scorer. So you're making CJ Miles the four. And so it's a great problem to have with Ingram, that if he gets good enough that the other team is going to put their better guy on him. But that also puts an onus on the other guy, whoever that is at the forward spot, to make sure that they are good enough that a team feels that they can exploit the mismatch in case the other team puts their four on him. Like, let's say you're facing the Spurs, so let's say they put Kawhi on one guy, LaMarcus on the other. You know, you want to make sure the other guy can beat up on LaMarcus a little bit, probably on the perimeter. And also, the idea of Ingram at the four, which is what I feel he should do, ideally, is it puts a little bit more on the center, because you're going to want somebody who's maybe a little bit more sturdy, just because they're going to be doing a lot of rim protection and all that kind of stuff. Because as much as Ingram will gain weight, he's never going to be that, you know, he's never going to be that guy who's just going to be Karl Malone in the post. Like, oh, no, he's just not who he is.
No, Ingram's always going to lack the ballast that you need to anchor defensively.
Yeah.
Right. The best defenders who are built like him learn to leverage their other strengths in order to compensate for that. And you see that with even a guy like Durant, who's not necessarily the best defender, but who is a plus defender for sure. You know, he continues to be able to back off guys and use his length and challenge at the rim without fouling. And those are things that hopefully Ingram can develop into. And I think that you're 100% right in terms of being able to pair him with a forward who's going to be able to complement him while also having the type of center who can do the things that you need a center to do in today's NBA, which is, you know, protect the rim, hedge out on pick and rolls, eventually, you know, switch on certain possessions and not just get destroyed by point guards who are trying to isolate him in space. But also a guy like Ingram, if he can develop that way, lends you so much roster flexibility in terms of the types of guys who you fill in beside him, right? Because if you want to pair him with a more traditional four, then you can, because you put him out on the perimeter and you can run pick and roll with him and then still force switches and do all kinds of things. Or if you want to end up using him more at power forward, then you can pair him with a more traditional three who is maybe like a 3-and-D guy who saves him from having to guard the other team's maybe 1A or 1B perimeter threat, right? When you run into a team who has multiple threats out there who can all do damage. And that's really the thing that intrigues me most about Ingram, is more his potential as a two-way player, more than what we've been talking about right now, which is as an offensive guy, right? And how to maximize him offensively. Because I still think the best teams have multiple two-way players who are impactful on both ends. Even when you look at the Warriors, a guy like Curry, who was sort of derided for his defense, you know, even just a couple of years ago, has become more than passable defensively and is a pest in the passing lanes and utilizes his quickness and his length to his advantage to disrupt ball handlers and force steals, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, there are two big kind of overarching things that the Warriors have done well that other teams need to emulate. And you nailed one of them with the two-way players, guys who have a strength on both sides. That is a great thing. Klay Thompson's a good example of this. He's become much better as a defender. But the other one that the Warriors have done well that has been a problem for teams like Memphis and arguably the Clippers is the reduction of severe negatives. And so that, like, basically anybody who has a negative that is easy to game plan for and that a team will are going to get exploited now because there's so much more money in the league. There are a lot more coaches, video, all that sort of thing. And so we're going to see more of that aggressive exploitation of anything that can be exploited. And so working to get players that can do a lot of things well, but also do nothing terribly, will be a fundamental change in the way that teams think about how they want to choose players.
Well, I think too that what you're really talking about is because it's one thing to be able to coast through the regular season based off of the individual strengths of your players and guys, and teams aren't necessarily game planning for you so much, but you get to the playoffs and then everything changes, right? You're in these 7-game series and coaches start to pinpoint where the weaknesses are and just hammer you and hammer you and hammer you until you have to make an adjustment. And then if you can't adjust, then you lose. And that's that. And we see that over and over again, even with really good teams.
The Spurs last year.
Yes, exactly. Or even the Clippers with some of their wing depth issues or even what we see with Oklahoma City. Right, with starting wings who basically can't shoot.
Yeah, and they were able to get around that a little bit when they went smaller because then you could play Andre as the worst shooter on the floor, but you need guys like Durant and Ibaka to make that work. And that shows how amazing it is of an undertaking when you have to deal with that sort of a circumstance. And so it will be fun to watch all of that as we move forward.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And that's why, you know, we've been talking a lot of Lakers and Warriors, but that's why, you know, league-wide, you start to see the emergence of a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns or Kristaps Porzingis, right? These sort of unicorn-type players who can play out to the three-point line, but who can also defend, who can score inside, who have enough ball-handling skills to be able to take advantage of other less-skilled big men. And that's why, like, I'm so excited about where the league is going now and the influx of young talent that we're seeing, because there's guys all over the league that I think in the next five to 10 years, the league is just going to become so, so great.
It's such a watchable product, and it's only going to expand with time because the strengths that the league is selecting for right now are very conducive to fun, engaging basketball. And that isn't always the case that it coincides with winning. I mean, you can think about it in various sports, but going for versatile players that don't take a lot off the table, you're going to get, you know, you're not going to get a lot of teams that are as good as the Warriors, but you're going to get teams that can maybe play like a poorer version of that. And that's a lot more fun to watch than some of the sloggy stuff that we've seen, particularly in the Eastern Conference in the last 10 years.
Or even just look at a team like Portland, right?
Yeah.
Who sort of went from this low post centered mid range game type with LaMarcus Aldridge and essentially lost him in free agency, which was probably ended up being a plus for them, right? Long term. And now they're much more guard centric. They've got these, like, a slew of these hybrid forwards and big men who play all over the floor, and they've just become one of the more fun teams to watch. And you pair a team like that with creative coaching, and you get this unbelievable product that night in and night out is entertaining for fans. And you're right, though, right, that there are only so many wins to go around, right? And when a team like the Warriors now, as long as they have this core group with Durant included, they're going to be challenging, you know, 65 to 70 wins every single season, as long as they're healthy. And as long as LeBron is LeBron and they've got the team that they have, then and the Spurs are playing at the level that they are, But around the rest of the league, you're going to see a lot of these teams, I feel like, that are in that 35 to 45 win range, all battling it out every single night, playing a skill game.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. So I'll end this on a question I've been ending a lot of podcasts on with guests, which is, this is a Locked On Warriors podcast, but so is there anything else that we haven't discussed that you think our listeners would like to know?
You talking about the Warriors specifically?
Sure, if you want.
To me, one of the interesting things about the Warriors is still what their big man situation is going to play out to be. Tonight, for example, I wasn't super impressed with David West. And I'm not sure if he's actually going to be a long-term solution for them. It'll be interesting to me to see if JaVale McGee actually makes the team. Kerr was talking recently about how he's got a good chance to make the team. I'm also very intrigued by Kevon Looney, who I think fell in the draft because of his hip thing, but he's a really good player. I saw a fair amount of him at UCLA. And so it'll be interesting to me to see how that big man rotation shakes out. I think Pachulia is a different type of player than Bogut, but a nice approximation for what he can do on a nightly basis in terms of numbers and impact, even if it comes in a totally different form. But I'm interested to see how things go with big man, you know, with the bigs at the fourth and fifth big spot, if that makes sense.
It totally does. And one of the things that I'm most excited about for this team, beyond the fact they're going to be really good, is that there is so much uncertainty. You know, usually when you see a team, and last year's Warriors are a great example of this, that when a team is as good as they were, there aren't a lot of questions. You know, it's just kind of, they're beating people. But this year's team has intrigue all over the place because there is so much that we just don't know.
Yeah, they're so in a way, they brought back, what, four core players or five core players, if you're going to throw in Clark, right? They've got Livingston and Iguodala, and then Clay and Draymond, and am I missing someone?
Yeah, so I'd say it's the big three, and then Iguodala, Livingston, and if you want to count Clark, you can.
Yes, right? And
we're not going to count Varejao.
No, we're not going to count Varejao. And so that's six guys, right? And they're going to carry 14 or 15 guys. And so even with six guys, you're still looking at the way that Kerr likes to play. I think you're still looking at a good four to five additional guys who are likely to be rotation players, right? On any given night, we will see this guy play, and not just play like 2 minutes, but he'll play, you know, 8 to 12 minutes, which is a rotation spot in the NBA. And that's five guys getting those minutes, right? And that's not a small amount when you're talking about a really good team. And so it's interesting to me. I know that the core four, those all NBA four, are going to carry this team forward to, you know, an astronomical win total. But all this other background stuff is going to be at least interesting to see how it plays out, even if it doesn't necessarily impact the win-loss total.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair way to characterize it. And thanks so much for taking the time.
No, thanks for having me on, Danny. Anytime.
Thanks again to Darius Soriano for taking the time to come on. You can read his great Lakers blog, Forum Blue and Gold, at forumblueandgold.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at forumbluegold. That's FORUMBLUEGOLD. I cracked up a little bit. He was talking about, I think it was about the defensive accountability, and he's like, yeah, I wrote about it last year, and I was aware of that because I read Darius's stuff a lot. I think he does great work, and I love that. I talked about it a little bit in the intro, the diversity of perspective, and Darius is a great voice to have and somebody who I'll probably have on Locked On Warriors with some frequency when the Warriors play the Lakers, because I do enjoy talking with him quite a bit, and I hope you enjoyed it too. It was a lot of fun to kind of get back a little bit into games, because even though they played the Lakers over the weekend, you know, this to me felt more like, you know, more like we're getting close. But again, like talking with Adam Wartz and yesterday, I'm just ready for the season to start. So there's one more preseason game on Friday at Oracle against the Blazers, and then the real stuff starts in less than a week, which is quite exciting. And it's going to be fun to really get into that. And so for those of you who want to send feedback, good, bad, indifferent, I get a lot of it and really do appreciate it. You can reach out to me on Twitter at Danny LaRoux, DannyLeroux. You can also email me at DannyLaRoux@gmail.com. I read everything, respond to what I can. Gotten some nice feedback on various issues in terms of trying to piece together how I want to do this podcast, because as much as I have experience doing this, being a prolific podcaster and all, doing a daily podcast on a team is a different endeavor. And so piecing it all together, reader input is extremely important. You can also follow the show, Locked On Dubs, on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook, and you can email the show, lockedonwarriors@gmail.com. That's also a good thing in terms of if you're a local advertiser and you want to do that. And that ties in with something that I've been super proud of to have is Athletes Collective. They are a wonderful company. I really do enjoy their stuff. Those of you who know my promo work on Real Jam Radio or anything else know that I'm better at endorsing things that I really do believe in, and I love their stuff. So you can go to athletescollective.com and use the promo code Warriors for 15% off your first order, and I think you'll really enjoy it. It's great stuff. And if you want to support the show, you can also subscribe, whatever you want to subscribe in, download every episode, and then leave a rating and a review. Really do appreciate it. I'm not going to make a bigger push on that sort of a thing until the season starts because, you know, I think there's an ebb and a flow to all of this kind of thing, and it's nice to do that. I can tell you, I have this rule, as some of you know, that I do not tell guests until at least it's recorded, and tomorrow's episode is already recorded, and that is with my friend and frequent podcast partner, Nate Duncan, and it's an idea that I pitched to him about a week ago about looking at the rest of the Pacific Division through the lens of the Warriors, and we recorded during the day today on Wednesday, and I'm really happy with the conversation. I'm not going to give it a thorough edit, but very happy with how it turned out. So that will be Friday's episode. I'm still not entirely sure how to handle the Blazers game. I'm probably going to record on it anyway, and so that might mean it's the second week in a row with six episodes. I have zero problem doing that when it's warranted, and it's going to be fun, and I'm already working on the guest list for next week, which is going to be awesome because it's the beginning of the season. There's a lot going on. So if you've enjoyed what we've done so far, get ready because it's about to get a lot more fun. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.